Next session is question and answer. Come reporting of meditation followed by Dhamma sharing. Now we open up for reporting of meditation and Q&A. Anybody who wants to ask any question and report their meditation, you can also ask any question related to the teaching to clear up your doubt. Then how to apply what you have learned to help you understand the cultivation while you go through life, to help you overcome all of your life situation and problem. Okay, the mic is here. You got any question, you raise your hand, then we will pass you the mic. Anybody? Yes. Oh yeah. So now you change to that place, Very good. Somebody help on the light in front, Thank you. The three button in orange,
Brother.
Yes. Just push it out all the way. Can I speak on it?
Brother, can you elaborate on direct seeing?
Okay. Very good question. Okay. The Buddha in his teaching mentioned very clearly what direct seeing is all about. He used the Pali word under the seven stages of purification. He also got mentioned jnana dasana, direct knowledge and vision of the reality. Means you see things as they are. Then there is no movement of mind. When there is no stirring of mind, when there is no chattering, it's the nature seeing things as they are. When you see things as they are without conditioning, listen, without your conditioning, without your memory, without any of this knowledge or labeling, what do you see? What do you see? When you have knowledge, you will perceive it there. Correct? Then you label according to your memory there. Buddha image or what. But when you see things as they are, like the painting, no word, nothing, what do you see? Because there is no conditioning, nothing to tell you beautiful, nice, not nice, no labeling, no word, nothing. Then what happened? Means you see reality. Can follow now. See reality means the truth as it is, not through a word, not through a labeling, not through a concept, not through an idea, not through a conditioning. Then what happened is, because you are silent, that nature can understand what is going on. Any movement, any perception, any reaction from the mundane mind, this nature will understand. Then how it get into trouble, it will understand. That's how the direct seeing can awaken. Then all of a sudden when you are ready, especially you have cultivated the first and second turning of the Four Noble Truths. You're familiar with the first and second turning, is it? Oh, you're not familiar. The three turning of the Four Noble Truths, you haven't taught, nobody teach you. Oh, you didn't go into it, You see, according to the Buddha under Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, you know about the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first sermon. Inside there, the Buddha himself said, even as a bodhisattva at that time, Buddha to be before he awakened, he has to understand this Four Noble Truth that he proclaimed in its three turning, 4 times 3 is 12 mode. Then only he can call himself the enlightened one or the Buddha. Even he himself has to understand the Four Noble Truths in his three turning to develop the three type of wisdom, only he can awaken to the truth. First turning is the Buddha just proclaimed this Four Noble Truths. So during that Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the first sermon, when the five ascetics were listening to his proclamation of truth, Kondanya become a sotapan straight away. You heard of that, isn't it? Before he finished the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, he awakened. Then the Buddha knew, he said, the Dhamma eye, Kondanya has seen the Dhamma. He is already a sotapan. How does it come about? He did meditate. He just sit and listen. Attentive. Understand? Attentively listening from the silent mind. No interference, because they have faith in the Buddha. After he left them earlier on, where the Buddha revert back to eating, they left him. Understand? They got no confidence in him. They thought he has given up. But then when the Buddha came back after a while, they saw his face so radiant, so peaceful, and he's so confident, and he told them, I have already understood the Dhamma. Now you listen, he said. And they have faith, that's why they listen. Then Kondanya was able to awaken because of the past. There was one life during the Buddha's time, Bodhisattva's life. He was a king, I think king of Kalinga, I think. Yeah. Then that time, he actually pretend to be like he is not fit to be the king, because he can recall his past life. He was in hell for 60,000 years. Because of the life, he became a king. Then he ordered so much killing, then he went down. Then the mother is a deva. The mother told him, you want to become a king again, you know? Otherwise you better pretend that you are like not fit to be a king, like retarded and all those things, like he didn't know anything. Then he pretend to be like that. Then finally the king gave up and decided to send him away. Then when he left in the forest, he cultivated, and he became this ascetic. Then there was an incident during that time where there is another king with all the concubine and the wife. They came. The king was hunting. Then this wife of the king, or concubine, they saw this ascetic with a lot of hair, very funny looking. At first they fear him. Then finally they realize that he is not harmful, he has a lot of love. Then they approach him and they talk to him. And he was so so different from normal being. They developed the interest in listening to him. Then he talked about his cultivation, how he become like that. Then now he is perfecting patience, kanti parami. Then the king came back, saw all the concubines missing, asked the general. The general said they are there over there listening to this ascetic. Then he went and listened. Then he heard what Sakyamuni, that time as a bodhisattva, was saying about the cultivation of patience, perfection. Then he got angry. He wanted to show off his authority. He tell that ascetic. He said, I was told you are cultivating patience. You can endure anything. Okay. He instructs his man, tie him to all the four horses and tear him apart. Then the bodhisattva that time, very strange. He said, yeah, that will be fine. He said. Then he said, are you sure? He said. He said, go ahead. He said, because if what I tell you is the truth, by the power of that truth, he said, may my limbs come back to me, and all the four limbs came back to him. You know? That's why the king panicked, got a shock. Straight away came down from the horse and paid respect to him. Then he told the king, "Don't worry, you have done me a good favor. You actually have allowed me to perfect my perfection of Kanti. And because of you, I will vow to take you across. You will be the first one when I become the Sammasambuddha." And that's how Kondanya become the ascetic. And he is the first to be taken across by Sakyamuni Buddha when he became a Sammasambuddha. And that one is through hearing. Suttamaya Panya is the wisdom born of the first turning. You know Sutta, discourse of the Buddha. Maya Panya is wisdom born of hearing the Sutta. And that is the first turning wisdom. So you have your past cultivation, like Kondanya. You listen, you can awaken. Then the other example is Sariputta. You heard of this story that one of the five ascetics, I forgot his name, right? What was his name? Asaji, yes. He respect Asaji a lot. No? Because he met Asaji before he met the Buddha. No? He saw Asaji was so serene, no? So mindful, no? In his demeanor when he go Pinnapat. No? So he decided to follow him. No? Then he waited till Asaji finished his meal. Then he approached him. "May I know who your teacher is? Your demeanor is so calm, so serene, is it? I would like to know who your teacher is. Then can you share with me whatever he shared with you?" Because Sariputta got great wisdom, and he don't need to see the teacher, actually. Then Asaji been very humble. He said, "I am still very new. I just learned from my teacher, and my teacher just taught me very few things. Is it? I don't think I can share with you much or teach you." Then Sariputta said, "No, don't worry. Whatever little you hear, just tell me. That will be good enough." Then, you know, Asaji repeated what the Buddha said about dependent origination, condition arising. He said, "My teacher say, whatever is of the nature to arise, there are causes and conditions behind. And these causes and conditions, my teacher has said and explained." From there, Sariputta become a Sotapan. Through hearing that truth. Yeah. That is first turning wisdom. Because he has the parami. Then I reflected back this life. 28 years ago, you know what happened? Huh? I tell myself, if I heard that, I will also awaken. Because cultivated before. You know what those two statements mean or not? Whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions. Means what? He's explaining to you that we are in a conditioned world. Everything is dependent on arising, condition arising. We are not in the unconditioned world. And he said, whatever condition that trigger of this, my teacher has explained, means the five pancha niyama and the sana, the five universal order. The first two are scientific, uttu niyama and bija niyama. Then the three other are spiritual law, karma niyama, citta niyama, and dhamma niyama. That's why from there, you awaken. That's why I know that these are the secret of life. This is his core teaching. Then the Buddha said, if after you listen, you cannot awaken, then you have to move on to the second turning, means you don't have the past. So you have to reflect on what he say, contemplate into it, and inquire. Why did the Buddha say that? Why did he say birth is suffering, old age, sickness, and death is suffering? And this inquiry, reflection, and contemplation is very important. Because when you reflect on it, means what? You go deeper into it. You try to stabilize what you have heard. Then you try to understand it, assimilate it into your understanding or your nature. That's why inquiry, reflection, and contemplation will stabilize this understanding. Then as you stabilize all this understanding, then it will develop another type of wisdom. The Buddha said, Chintamaya Panya, wisdom born of contemplation, reflection, and inquiry. I give you an example. Birth is suffering. You inquire, why did the Buddha say that? When you inquire means what? You throw up that question. Then through your life experience, you have witnessed birth. Then you scan through birth. You don't do anything, no? You just recollect. Then, as you silence your mind and recollect, all of a sudden you realize, yeah, birth is suffering. Because the moment a child is born, he cries. Then with birth come what? Old age, sickness, and death. The first noble truth, reality, all manifest. Then you realize it's the truth. Then after that, the Buddha, under the second turning, he said, this noble truth of suffering is to be understood. This is where the inquiry will lead to the second turning wisdom. You have to inquire, why did the Buddha say this noble truth of suffering, the eighth reality, is to be understood? Means if I know it as a knowledge, it's not enough. Means I must understand what suffering is. How can you understand suffering? How can I develop the understanding? Then you read through the whole of the first noble truth. He summarized all of suffering as what? Attachment to the five aggregate of form and mind. Upadana kanda. Correct, right? The five aggregate of form and mind. The final summary. In short, it is due to your delusion, self-delusion, that grasps and clings. That's how suffering arises, leading to craving, which is the cause of suffering. So you inquire, why did the Buddha say that? How come he summarized everything as this? That's why the meditation is on the five aggregate of form and mind, nothing else. Then, how can I understand? To understand, I must understand what is the five aggregate of form and mind, correct or not? That's how you have to meditate, reflect, contemplate. And I come up with the understanding where I saw them in the meditation, the two aspects of the five aggregate of form and mind. Then it come out. Only when I understand what they are, only I can put them to test. Correct or not? I can investigate whether what the Buddha said is true. If I attach to the first aggregate of physical form, do I suffer? Do you suffer? If you believe this is you, you will fear that this one will grow old, get sick and die. Correct or not? Because you think this is you. That's why when I attach to physical body, I suffer my own form. Then if I attach to external form, can be my loved one, my possession, my wealth. There is fear of losing them, fear of them separating from you. Then I realize this is so true. Understand or not? If I attach to my school, my race, my reputation, then I suffer. When people say something bad about it, I want to argue. I become afflicted. I become miserable. So attachment to external form can bring about suffering. So true. Then second aggregate is feeling. When feeling arises, if I attach, how? I crave for good feeling, which is sensual desire. And I don't like negative feeling, like aversion, pain, itchiness, numbness, or whatever, unhappy feeling. When you do that, what happens? Craving become positive and negative. I will suffer because they are conditioned arising state. They will come to pass. They will change. Whatever good feeling, it will change. It will cease to be and become otherwise. If I have duality, I will be afflicted. So what happened is, the Buddha came to realize that whatever pleasurable state, if you attach and cling, is a prelude to suffering. That's why you cannot attach, you cannot cling. Good food got conditioned to arrive, eat. But no more condition like now in retreat. But to be fair, our vegetarian meals are very good. Very, very good. Otherwise, let's say you go overseas. Last time, my spiritual trip, First time I went overseas, you know, in the year 1988, I went to Australia to see my teacher Ajayantra, you know, the retreat, actually Katina. First time I took my whole family there, my wife, my two children, and I spent about 10,000 ringgit. At that time was a lot of money. And you know what I did? I went to a farm place, you know, Belbert Farm, 500 over kilometers from Sydney, you know, with nobody to guide me. You know. I just find my way there because Ramanda and Sister Sumitra were there. We just write letter, and that time letter take 3 weeks to arrive. You know. Oh. Then I receive the letter. Based on that, we fly, 8 of us. Then we go there. Luckily, they stand by one driver to look for us, you know. And he's a Thai, you know, don't know how to speak English. You know. Wow, that Thai like chicken and duck. But somehow I can sense where he wear white shave, like a samanera. Then he hold a cut. Then I saw my name there. Oh, I say, you must be the one. I say, yeah, you are Mr. Teo. Kun Teo. That's how we went. And you know that Belbert Farm, it was 100 over acres land donated by a Australian lady, Elizabeth something. No proper facility, it's a farmhouse, abandoned. No water, no electricity, no sanitary. At night, minus 6 degrees Celsius. And all the Thai food people make offering, but very spicy. And not used to Thai food at that time. Oh, luckily got Dhamma. No. Otherwise, complain like mad. Then when I came back, people asked me, where you go? Oh, I say, I went to Australia. Wow, you enjoy life. I say, no. He said, if I tell you where I go, you will never believe and you will say how stupid you are. Go to such a place. Go and torture yourself. At night, we were first night, we were put in an abandoned house, no timber house, no firewood, no. You got a fireplace where you burn the fire, that at night it keep you warm. You know. No firewood, nothing. No. And I first time go to such a cold country in winter. No. So my family, they all were there. So we all have to make do with whatever we have because only next morning we can reach the place where we're supposed to be and met up with Ramanda and Sister Samira. So that night was a good experience. How I endure the cold, how I understand the 5 daily contemplation and reflection. Otherwise, I will suffer. Understand? I will curse myself for taking my family there. But luckily, my kid, my wife, very good. He got all the wooden clothing and all the things. Then I just, at that time, where I got heat tech and all the things, nothing. I just put on 2 layers and with my external sweater, just like this. Very simple. But I can endure, so no problem. Next day, I was more lucky. We got a kitchen place with the fire and night. The burner, they burn there, the heat is there. Then I was with Ramanda. He invited me to share his caravan. He put another bed there, so I slept together with him. So that's how I endure and develop all this understanding. How did I come to here? Yeah? I was answering his question. How did I come to here? Huh? Oh, yeah. Now I recall. Pleasant and unpleasant. So if I complain, means what? I have craving. I compare with Malaysia. If I stay here, everything's so good because I quite successful actually at that time. And I have aircon, everything, nice house, everything. Why I all the way there? Because the mind understand that is where the Dhamma is. That is what I really look forward to. So my faith was so strong that I can accept the condition. Condition like that, it has to be like that. I got 2 choices. Complain, react, lament, become miserable. If I can accept that reality, just like the Denmark incident, you are in Denmark, that is the reality. I'm in Belbert Farm, that is the reality. Condition like that, I must accept my mind at peace, then I meditate. Then I can do what I want to do. Understand? Then because of that understanding, there was so much joy. then I can feel the nature, I can be with the nature. Then when I'm silent without thought, I am not cold. I remember the second night, middle of the night, about 3 something a.m. Right, mind already up. And that time my mindfulness very good, I never sleep also. So I knew he came up. So I also wake up. Then there was a fireplace outside, very big fire. Then Ramana went, sit, meditate. Then about 20 old people already there. Then I also went, I also sat opposite him. Then there's one Dhamma dog, very funny. This Dhamma dog, they already call him a Dhamma dog. Yeah, he every time sit underneath my teacher's kuti. He said, anybody with good meditation, mind state, the dog will know. Then this dog came. He went to Ramanda there. Then I felt the dog. Then I opened my eyes, I saw. Then I rejoiced. Then I radiate love and metta. Then after that, the dog turned. Ramanda also saw. Then he went straight to me, and wagged the tail and sit beside me. Ramanda saw, he also laughed. He also smiled. Then I also smiled. Then I meditate. Then I say, okay, you can go. Then the dog go. Oh. He only come to the two of us. Then the rest of that was history. What I want to share with you is, if your mind is at peace, you will have Dhamma. If your mind is silent, you will understand many things. So your question is direct seeing, the tree turning. Now I go back to that one. So if you attach the feeling, the aggregate, you will have craving, you will suffer because you will complain, you will react, you don't have wisdom. Feeling will only remain as pure feeling when you can accept them for what they are. Otherwise, your craving will arise. You would crave to have the pleasurable anasana, the comfortable condition, the good feeling, the unhappy feeling you want to reject. So both are mental hindrance. It will make you restless. It will bring about heedlessness and create wrong thought. That's how you develop negativity of mind state. And you cannot meditate because it's a hindrance. It will hinder you from entering the meditative state of inner peace and inner mindfulness. That's why your sati cannot maintain. And you cannot meditate because it's a spiritual faculty. Without sati, there is no investigation of Dhamma. To investigate Dhamma, you must have sati. Without sati, there is no mindfulness. Without mindfulness, there is no heedfulness. Without mindfulness, you cannot cultivate four foundations of mindfulness. So mindfulness is so important. That is the first enlightenment factor. I need to have that. Otherwise, I cannot move. That's why the whole of cultivation is about mindfulness. That's why I stay silent. The moment I am silent without thought, I am mindful. That's why that one can see things as they are, without word, without conditioning, nothing. Then it can understand from any movement. Then coming back to the 5 degrees of form and mind, when you contemplate and inquire, I have finished feeling. Then the next one is perception. Anything you perceive is like external form, your loved one and all those things, your possession, your wealth, your career. If you attach and cling, you will suffer, you know. Then if you attach to your views and opinion, born of your thinking, your conditioning, your belief system, you will also suffer. Because you will have this egoic mind wanting to be right. Then you cannot accept other explanation. So attachment to sankhara, to mental state, mental formation, your views and opinion, which is your belief system, conditioning, you will suffer. Then when you attach to consciousness, everything that you see, you hear, smell, taste, the Buddha gave an analogy that they are like a magician creating illusion for you to see. Your magician is an illusionist. So these are not real. Condition arising phenomena, like whatever you see. Open your eyes, arise already, exist. Close your eyes, cease. That's why you are the greatest magician. But you cannot see all this because you don't have the silent mind to see. You are so preoccupied with what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. That's why you think a lot, you worry a lot, you plan a lot. So much so, you are never silent within the moment. To live life, to understand life, to develop the understanding of life. Because human beings are too busy thinking, planning, worrying, commenting, and stirring the mind when they go through life. This is heedless living. That's why you cannot understand. If you attach to the seeing consciousness means everything within the visual form. You believe they are real, you will cling, you will grasp, you will give meaning. That's why the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, the two Novik monks, they argue about the flag and the wind. One say the flag move, the other one say the wind move. Why? Because they can't understand. They look at form. They cannot understand the unreality of form, the condition arising nature of form. They cannot understand that form is unreal. That's why they cannot see form. They cannot see the unreality of form. That's the reason why they cannot see beyond form. That's why they get entangled with form. Just like the thought-based meditation. They get entangled with the aggregate of mind, thinking that this is their instrument, where they are so used to thinking. Thought is the only instrument. They use them almost 99% of the time. They never knew that there is another instrument that you can live with, awareness, sati. It's just like the fish, I give you an analogy. You tell the fish before he's caught on the net, you say there is another environment where land with air, no water one. He say, you crazy. Since birth until now, I've been in the ocean or in the water all the time. You tell me you got land. But the moment he's caught in the net and when he's on land, and then he realized there is another environment which is air on land. It's just like when you live your life continuously within the field of thought. So you believe the whole of existence is thought-based. And that's all. Without thought, I cannot live. But when people tell you, you don't need really exist in the thought condition. You can cease your mind and reside within the silent. Just aware and feel, and you become very sensitive. But because you can never do it, that's why you don't believe. Like I used to tell some of the friends, okay, he asked me, what is meditation? I said, meditation is just silent. He said, what do you mean by silent? I said, don't think. You know what he told me or not? How can don't think? You're crazy. I said, oh. Because you ask anybody who is not a meditator, you tell him don't think. He said, you're crazy, I don't think. He don't believe. Oh. He said, how can the mind stop thinking? He said, cannot. He said, his mind is so restless, he thinks a lot, and every day also worry a lot. So much thing to do. He said, oh, he said, that is how you live life. God bless you. So, when you understand all this, then you realize that Buddha's teaching is so powerful. I can put it to test because I know what this five degree of form in mind is. Then I reflect, contemplate, then I understand. Then I realize this teaching is so beautiful. Then my understanding stabilizes. Then I'm ready to receive truth. That's why after that you go into the meditation, which is called the direct seeing. Third turning wisdom is Bhavana Maya Panya. The Buddha said, this noble truth of suffering has already been understood. Means what? Enlightened already. Understand? He know what suffering is. He know the cause. He know how to cease. And he know the path that lead to the cessation. That's why the four noble truth has been understood. That's why the third turning is always about wisdom born of meditation. That's why it's called Bhavana Maya Panya. Wisdom born of Bhavana, which is the meditative training. Okay? So, under the third turning, because you are ready with the first and second turning wisdom, you prepare the base to receive truth. Then any of these three turning, the moment you listen or contemplate or insight into through the direct seeing, because when you do the four foundation of mindfulness, you silence your mind. Understand not? Then you develop heedfulness, continuous mindfulness, ever mindful, to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. That is what heedfulness is all about. Then when you can do that, your mind will awaken. You will understand. The base is already there. That's why during the time of the Buddha, many monks become enlightened. When he spoke the fire sermon, so many monks become enlightened. He said, external form is burning. The eye is burning. Contact is burning. Feeling that arises upon contact is burning. Means the whole depends on origination. Every link is burning. With what is it burning? With the three evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. It is burning. And within that sermon, I don't know how long, thousands of monks become arahant. How is it possible? Because they have the condition, they are ready. And he is the Sammasambuddha. Okay? So direct seeing is a silent mind without thought, without conditioning from your brain, from your memory. It's just sitting as they are. It's not easy when you are new. You must develop the cultivation, means the spiritual faculty must be there. When your five spiritual faculty is there, technically you don't need an object of meditation. Your object of meditation is just a skillful mean to train your mind. All the method and technique is to anchor the mind so that it's not heedless. Then you train it, stabilize it. If you already have the spiritual faculty, why must you do that? If you have the faith, your mind is very composed and very calm. If you have the virya, there is this spiritual zeal, tenacity to cultivate. Then you have sati, means you already silent, no thought. Then you have samadhi, means at the moment of sense experience is collected and unwavering, it does not stir. So every moment of living, you can see things as they are. That's why understanding arise, wisdom arise, the fifth spiritual faculty. Then you keep on understanding things. You ask Song. After he connect and he develop the direct seeing, he keep on understanding the Dhamma. I never teach him anymore other than he just read my notes. A few years ago, he read my notes, he cannot understand. Six times he read, he cannot understand, you ask him. Then the moment he connect, which is only about 1+ year ago, when he was in Thailand, and in Rayong, I asked him to ask for forgiveness, do the bowing, develop the daily mindfulness. Then all of a sudden the Heart Sutta came, then he just connect. Then after that at night he read my note, he understand. How can he understand? Where this teaching come from the silent mind. Without the silent mind, you cannot understand. If you use your thought, your knowledge, your conditioning, you cannot understand. You must give yourself a chance. Silent, assume you don't know anything, then find out, investigate from zero base, square one. And then you will progress very fast. If it's the truth, like the Buddha said, Ehi Paseko, the Dhamma will stand up to investigation. It's the truth, it's the reality. It points towards the reality. If it's not the truth, it will not stand up to investigation. It will not liberate the mind. It will not bring about freedom, liberation. You have to ask somebody whom you know and familiar with to be confident. Otherwise, it's only my words. People whom I know, you don't know. So I don't blame you for all those questions and those doubts, which is good. If you don't ask, there's no condition for all this understanding to arise. So we should thank you. Eh? Thank you so much. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. When the sati come, when the mindfulness come, your form and mind will know. When you are in sati, it's not what people tell you. When you are in sati, it's just like swimming. You know how to swim or not? Before you know how to swim, people tell you, you jump into the pool, don't struggle. Just let it be. Your natural body weight is lighter than water. You will float. First time you go in, every step you take, you sink. You don't believe. Hey, crazy. Then every time you try, you drink water. But one day, if let's say you become very confident, because somebody you know did it, and it can be done. Then you have faith, you believe, then you let the body go down. Or really, it sinks. Because before the up thrust, the buoyancy force build up, you will sink. But if you have faith, confidence, silent, no fear, you don't struggle, it will reach an equilibrium. And after that, the up thrust will push you up. Then you realize, hey, my body is really lighter than water. And buoyancy is possible. And when you want to swim, if you understand this secret or this nature's law, swimming is so simple, isn't it? You only move your hand and leg, isn't it? Then you swim, isn't it? You don't have to struggle, isn't it? When you don't know how to float, you struggle, you're scared. The fear say, I don't want to sink. Meditation is the same. The natural state of mind is the meditative state. Why do you go and stir the mind? Struggle in the water. Try to keep afloat. The natural state of mind is already in sati when it's without thought. It's just like your buoyancy, understand? It's already there. You don't have to struggle to stay afloat, understand? You don't have to do anything to stay afloat. You only have to be silent. That is sati, without thought. That is the true mind. Why can't people understand? Because meditator got this ego. You want me to meditate? I must have a method and a technique. And I must have a meditator. Somebody must meditate. That's why they get into trouble. Oh, who is the meditator? The thought is the meditator. What is method, technique? A series of instructions to ask your thought to do. Note this, note that, focus on this, focus on that, concentrate on that. That is not meditation. The Buddha just said, aware, silent. Why can't you just do that? Mindful, aware, standing, aware. He never says standing, note, standing, 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 walking, note, intention to walk. Where got this type of teaching? This type of teaching comes from somebody else. The Buddha never teach that way. The Buddha teach mindfulness. So when you understand, all this will fall into place. Then you realize with this understanding, you progress very far. You save a lot of time. You don't have to walk the, they call yin wang lu. You know, yin wang lu, yin wang lu. The unnecessary detour, understand? That take you to Holland and then how to come back. So, the teaching is very simple when you understand, it's very direct. But when you don't understand, I can tell you, it's a hell lot of difficult and very difficult to understand and find. Because they cannot distinguish between the two minds, the true mind and the mundane mind, conditioned arising mind. They are always with the thought. They are never with sati. You are never silent, aware. You are always thinking, reacting, planning, worrying. You don't live life. You are too busy thinking, planning, and worrying about life. So much so, you never live life. Okay? Yeah. So, any more question or meditation reporting? Yeah. You don't have? We go on a bit. Otherwise, this Heart Sutta will never finish. Okay. You can write your question when you are in your room. Thank you. Okay, we turn to page 4. We got 15 more minutes. Second Heart Sutta notes. This is a recap of what we went through last time. The 10 perfections or 10 paramitas of the Theravada tradition are Dana, Sila, Nikkama. Dana, you know, generosity or giving. Sila is morality or precepts. Then Nikkama is renunciation. You renounce. Then Panya is wisdom. Virya is spiritual zeal or strong tenacity or energy to cultivate. Then Kanti is patience. Satya is truth. Adhittana is aspiration or resolution or self-determination or vow. Then metta is loving kindness. Upekkha is equanimity of mind. So these are the 10 perfections that you have to cultivate. A bodhisattva who intends to be a samasambuddha must cultivate and perfect them. The Mahayana, they talk about the 6 perfections or paramita of the Mahayana tradition. They actually cut short because these 6 actually is also more or less complete. Dana is the same, giving or generosity. Then Kanti is patient with understanding. Then they have another extra is Dhyan, Samadhi. Then they have Sila. Sila is the same. Precept. Virya is the same, spiritual zeal. And Prajna is the same, wisdom. So this Dhyan is actually meditation, anasana, samadhi. When you perfect all of the meditation, the understanding, you will develop the full understanding of what they call perfection of prajna, and from there your all the other perfection will be understood. So that's why prajna paramita is very important. Then word of wisdom of Lord Buddha extracted from Dhammapada verse on avoiding all evil due to purifying the mind. We are having right view with regards to the law of karma. So I explained this already. Eh? Verse 1, verse 2 is the first two opening verse that the Buddha always emphasized on. And this statement is very powerful. Mind is the forerunner of all things. This one, if you can awaken to this, you actually can become enlightened. That's why Mahayana also use this. Yiqie wei xing zao. Everything arises from the mind. The mind created it. When mind arises, everything comes to be. The whole of your consciousness, seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, and thought process, you need mind, understand not, to make contact. It's only when mind arises that everything comes to be. That's why mind is the forerunner of all things, and mind is chief. So if you don't see this, you don't pay attention to this, you don't take care of mind, you will suffer. If you become heedless, you don't care. You don't train yourself to develop mindfulness and heedfulness, to see your mind, to make sure you avoid all evil, do good, and purify the mind. Then it will develop heedlessness leading to suffering. That's why Dhammapada was once said, if you were to act, speak, and think with a wicked mind, unwholesome mind, which you are not heedful, not mindful, with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, then suffering will follow you, like the wheel that follows the hood of the ox. Then verse 2 is the opposite, complementary verse. Again, the Buddha said, mind is the forerunner of all things, mind is chief. Everything arises from the mind. So if one speak, act, and think with a wholesome mind, pure mind, free of the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, means right thought, right speech, right action, then happiness will follow you like the shadow that never leaves you. So to live life is very simple. If you choose to be happy, avoid Dhammapada verse 1. Train your mind to be heedful, mindful. Then you will be happy. Otherwise, continue to do what you are doing now. Be heedless and see how you suffer and how you become miserable. And you can put these two verses to test. They are the truth. So simple. When you are mindful, you see them. Whenever you have the evil root, when you are selfish, angry, emotional, fearful, are you happy? These evil roots are the root of all evil. They will make you evil. There's like selfish people break precepts, simply do things. Emotional people become very violent. Fearful people also can become very violent. They are very sick people. They believe what they were told. That's why they are fanatics. There are people who do things without anybody, and nobody can understand why they are like that. They call them sick people. Then Dhammapada verse 183 we have gone through. All evil is to be avoided. Cultivate whatever wholesomeness or goodness when there is condition, and purify the mind. For these are the advice of all Buddha. In Pali, they always chant this. Sabba papasa akaranam kusalesa upasambadan sacitta pariyotapanam etang buddhana sasana. So all these are very important Dhammapada verse. Now we go to the next page, page 5. Verse 21, 22, 23. These are the Appamadavagga, means the section on Dhammapada verse on heedfulness. There are 20 verses. Verse 21 to verse 40. The first three are most important. First, verse 21, the Buddha said, can we read together? Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. Heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedful do not die. The heedless are as if dead. Means spiritually you are as if dead if you are heedless. So your life, you decide. You want to be heedful or heedless, up to you. It's your choice. Then the Buddha further confirmed, he said, distinctly understand this difference. the wise intent on heedfulness, and they will rejoice in the rhyme of the Aryas or the enlightened one. That's why you don't intend on heedfulness, you choose to be heedless. Up to you. Your life, you decide. This is verse 22, Dhammapada. Then the verse 23 confirm everything. And this is what heedfulness is all about. The Buddha said, when you are heedful, you will have this quality. He said, the constantly meditative, the ever mindful, and the steadfast one, they will realize the bond-free Nibbana. Ever mindful means what? Not only mindful, no. Ever mindful, even in the midst of daily life, understand not? That is the first condition for heedfulness. Then constantly meditative means what? Constantly cultivating the Noble Eightfold Path, which include the four foundations of mindfulness. That's why sikkhas and asikkha. Sikkha are those on training, the monks. Asikkha are beyond training, no need to train. So this one guarantee realization of Nibbana if you can have this quality of mind called heedfulness. That's why he said the heedful never die. Heedfulness is the path to the deathless. So all these are very clear. Then the Buddha, before his parinibbana, advised all the monk, apamadena sambadeta. Why did he say that? Just one advice. Strive on with heedfulness. The moment you are heedful, you are already destined for enlightenment. That's why all of meditation is to understand this word and train your mind to develop this. All of the method technique to me no meaning. The method and technique is a skillful mean to anchor the mind on it, just the beginning, to develop mindfulness. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. But when you are mindful, without cultivating the meditation as taught by the Buddha, means constantly meditative, then that is not meditation to the Buddha, understand not? Those who are very mindful, ever mindful, they play games, Tai Chi. They are very mindful, very skillful. But they don't use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, wisdom, to liberate their mind. And that one is mindfulness, but not heedfulness. So I hope you see the difference. So heedfulness, the heedful never die, eternalize spiritually. The heedless eyes, if dead, means spiritually. Then the final summary of the first Noble Truth, this is what just now I share with you all. The Buddha said, in short, it is the attachment or grasping and clinging to our five aggregate of form and mind, or upadana khandas, grasping aggregate of form and mind, via one's delusion or ignorance that I call dukkha or suffering. The word dukkha, or Sanskrit word dukkha, is one of those Pali terms that cannot be translated adequately into English by one word. For no English word covers the same ground as dukkha in Pali. Suffering, ill will, anguish, unsatisfactoriness are some favorite renderings. The word pain, misery, sorrow, conflict, and so forth are also used. The word dukkha, however, includes all that and more than that. The reference is page 37 of the Buddha's Ancient Path by Piyadasi. So this word dukkha, you have to understand. All of your unsatisfactoriness. That's why the cause of dukkha is craving, even for the pleasant state. Pleasant experience is still dukkha, understand? When you cannot get what you want. So it doesn't mean unsatisfactoriness alone. When you crave for beautiful mind state, especially those who meditate and attach to their experience, they want it repeated, cannot, they become miserable. You say, how come last time I can, now I cannot? I can tell you very simply, like nice food. You first time eat, very nice, you enjoy like anything. Every day go and eat. After the fifth day, you say, and now I think I want to try something else, no matter how nice, because your craving is like that as well. When you never experience, you really have craving. Like they look for a girlfriend. Because never experience. But after they find out the problem that come with it, they scared of having girlfriend. My son used to tell us, he said, oh, daddy, I don't know, girlfriend, come mafan. Well, initially, not mafan. Then later on, he said, you see the true color. Wow, come mafan. Then he will tell you a lot of story. You know. He said, make appointment, take him to shopping, what? Agree already. You know. Next morning, sleep until midday or so, never wake up. Then when they wake up, they tell you to go. But you already have your plan, understand? To do what, to do what. Oh, is it? Then you tell them, they're not happy, they throw tantrum. So a lot of things. Then you say, take them for dinner, initially very happy. Then after that, for no reason, one phone call, one WhatsApp come, become miserable. Might stay home. Oh, is it? This is a human being. That's why you must marry somebody with dhamma, then you have this. Oh, hard to find. Mimi's son cannot find a girlfriend like that, is it? Very difficult. He said, mommy, cannot find, you say. All the girlfriend, materialistic ones, don't have dhamma. So young, the son, like one son. So anyway, what's the time now? Oh, 3 more minutes. Okay, we finish this. Oh, 7 factors of enlightenment. Never mind, this one maybe we continue later. So you got any more questions or not? Otherwise we stop here. Lunch is 11:30, right? Oh, 12. Wow, we still got so much time. Oh, good, good. Thank you. 12, no mistake, Oh, yeah, 12, yeah. Oh, good. Okay, we go on, 1.6. The 7 factors of enlightenment. Just now I gone through already, Now I read through again, The 7 factors of enlightenment, or Satta Bhujanga. This is a sutta, when the monk are sick. The Buddha will advise the disciple to go and chant. Because these are arahant, enlightened monk. So when you chant the 7 factor enlightenment, they recover. Because this enlightenment factor will bring about the condition for the Dhamma to arise again. Otherwise, you know what happened. Arahant, or enlightened being, after they already developed the clear understanding, They're not like living being, very enthusiastic about training, learning, meditating, or something. They already understood all those things. Understand or not? So when they go through bodily sickness, they don't suffer actually. But they endure, understand or not? They accept the reality. But the Buddha knew, if you talk to them on Dhamma, especially remind them of the 7 factors of enlightenment, their virya will arise, their joy will arise. That's why they become much better. But you ask them to simply go and arise this, to overcome all this, they won't do it. That's why those Dhamma friends who know me last time, he said, when Brother Theo retired, you go and talk to him on Dhamma, he become very energetic. And he can speak and talk. Because Dhamma is like food for the spiritual. Understand? Then when there is Dhamma, there is so much joy. It comes from the heart, direct from the heart. From the nature, it manifests. It's not from the thought. That's why there is a type of joy, enlightenment factor that arises. And the Dhamma is really beautiful. It can touch the heart of living beings. It can awaken them. It can make them change, transform. And within the Kayamita, so many you can see recovered from their depression, their sadness, their problem, and other things. How can it happen? Most of them are psychiatric patients or many years of taking medication. They just walk out of it, no need medication, through the understanding. And now they are so different, so beautiful, so heedful. Mind state so beautiful, full of right thought, right speech, right action. There is so much joy in them. They not only gain back their life, they gain back their happiness, their understanding, freedom, then they can be a blessing to many. That's why they are helping others, bringing them to develop the same understanding, showing them the way. Through their own transformation, people can feel you, can sense you. And many people tell me, oh yeah, this Kayan Mitao, yes. Last time, now completely changed. So different. Why? I never teach them anything. I just share with them my understanding. Then up to them, because they have faith. Somehow they have affinity, they have faith. Then they just listen attentively and follow simple instruction and do. And these are the people without Dhamma, I tell you. Never learned meditation before. Never learned the teaching before. Green slate. They progress very fast. Because like a dry sponge, absorb very fast. If you already got too much Dhamma knowledge, that one most difficult to teach. Because the brain keep on rejecting. So having an open mind is very important. Okay, we go on. Sati or mindfulness is the first of the seven factors of enlightenment, followed by investigation of Dhamma or Dhamma Vichaya, which is the second factor of enlightenment. Without sati, one cannot be heedful or ever mindful. Hence, one cannot investigate the Dhamma. That's the reason why sati or heedfulness is very important. For sati is life, because the heedless are as if dead. So now you understand, If you have sati, then you can be heedful. Then only you are living life, understand? Otherwise, you are as if dead. That's why for sati is life. Those enlightened beings, they know. I remember Achan Cha also said this in one of his books. For sati is life, he said. But he didn't explain this way. With sati, one can investigate the Dhamma. And if it's the truth, then this Dhamma can stand up to investigation, giving rise to very strong faith in the Buddha. Then the virya of spiritual zeal, which is the third enlightenment factor, will arise, thereby enabling one to cultivate the Dhamma according to the Buddha's advice. How you investigate? You investigate Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, Dhammapada verse 183, the essential Dhamma, the three evil roots, the five mental hindrances, the four noble truths, and all those related essential Dhamma. And when you realize that they stand up to investigation, you got so much joy and your faith becomes unshakable. That's how virya will arise. Then sati will then stabilize the piti or the spiritual joy, which is the fourth enlightenment factor. Where when there is virya, what will happen? It will drive you to cultivate it. Then your sati will become more stable, more refined. And when there is sati, piti will arise. Understand? Your mind is very calm, very peaceful, mindful, without thought. That's why piti will arise. So when piti arises, it's a fourth enlightenment factor. Then you like to meditate. Once piti is stabilized and become more refined, it will accumulate into opacity or tranquility of mind, which is the fifth enlightenment factor. With opacity becoming more and more stable, the mind will accumulate into samadhi, a stable, collected, and unwavering mind, which is the sixth enlightenment factor. With sati and samadhi in place, wisdom or panya will keep on arising, giving rise to the last or the seventh factor of enlightenment, which is equanimity or upeka, born of wisdom. Then note, samadhi is a stable, collected, unwavering mind that does not waver at the moment of sense experience while in the midst of life. This is upacara samadhi, not apana samadhi. You don't carry the very strong concentration mind state. Okay, next page. The three universal characteristics of anicchang, dukkang, anatta. How many of you never heard of this word before? The three universal characteristics. Oh, good. Everybody heard before. Very good. These are the three universal characteristics of nature, the Buddha said. It is inherent in all phenomena in this universe. within the conditioned world, whether it's physical phenomena or nature's phenomena or your mental phenomena, they have these characteristics of impermanent leading to suffering. And because they are impermanent, it's anatta, non-self, or empty nature, because it's not a permanent and changing entity. Then you have to understand the five universal law or orders, pancha niyama, that governs all of life and existence. This one I have gone through. Uttu niyama, which is the physical law of nature, bija niyama, the biological order of nature. Then the next three is spiritual law of nature, karma niyama, or the law of karma, citta niyama, or the law of the mind, and dhamma niyama, the law of truth or dhamma, as taught by the Buddha. So understanding these three spiritual laws that governs all of life and existence will give rise to the three important right views as taught by the Buddha in the Noble Eightfold Path. That is, the three key right views are the spiritual law. Law of karma, you reap what you sow. Do good because good, do evil because evil. And you are born of your karma, heir to your karma, conditioned and supported by your karma. And you are what you are because of your karma. So this one is part of your five daily contemplation. And this is what you need to develop the right understanding. So this right view is very powerful. This is how the Buddha's advice come about, the precept come about. So all this, they are all linked and connected to this law. Then law of mind, citta niyama, refer to the dependent origination of paticca samuppada. This explains to you clearly how you function as a human being, how your mind arises and passes away, how there are various links condition your mind into all the various mind states. There are 12. And when you understand how your mind functions, you will know how to develop the wisdom to free it, to liberate from it. These pancha niyamas, understanding these three great spiritual laws is likened to understanding the secret of life, giving rise to wisdom to enable one to truly live life. Having this right view will lead to the understanding of non-delusion, non-attachment, non-grasping or non-clinging, hence freeing the mind and liberating the mind of all suffering. When you can transcend the three evil roots, means you will not be gullible, you will not be entangled anymore. That's why you will have non-greed, non-anger or non-hatred. So you will not grasp, cling and hold. So all this will enable you to liberate your mind. So non-attachment, non-delusion, and non-grasping or clinging are very important understanding. Then these pancha niyamas can also be explained by the four aspects of Dhamma as explained by Ajahn Buddhadasa. Buddhadasa is a very good monk. In Thai, they call him Ajahn Buddhathat. He is in Surat Thani. I went and see him many times. I think at least two or three times. That time he was already 80 years old. The early 80s, I think. Then later on, 1987-88. He happened to be Ajahn Yantra's teacher, one of the teacher. My teacher's teacher. And because of that, I went to see him. I read his book. His book was not bad. According to the Buddhadasa, he defined Dhamma as the four aspects. First aspect is, he said there is nature. Nature. You understand, nature. Then there are laws that govern nature. That is the second aspect of Dhamma. Then the third aspect is, it, there is a right duty that one must perform towards this law of nature. Well, this law that governs nature means duty. Of who? Form and mind. Understand not? The form and mind has a duty. That's why I told you. When you understand the Dhamma, you cannot simply say, all non-self. I don't kill anybody. You simply do things. No. Form and mind is still form and mind. Recognize relationship. Form and mind still recognize Dhamma. Understand not? That's why it has a duty, otherwise your karmic nature will fall. The form and mind that come will suffer. That's why it's not you, but it has a duty, because it is also dependent on law of karma for its arising. Then the last aspect is, when you do that right duty, you reap the fruit of one's hard work after having performed that duty. That's why my teacher, Ajayantra, he always told us in the Dhamma talk. He said, right duty is right Dhamma. But in Thai, he pronounced it as Tamak. Right duty is right Tamak. So now you understand. You can have right duty towards the world, the form and mind. It means you have Dhamma. You understand the teaching. If you simply do things and neglect your duty, you don't have Dhamma. Okay, next page, 1.9. This one very important. You must understand the essential Dhamma of the three evil roots. Why are they called three evil roots, or the three poison of greed, hatred, and delusion? Mahayana call it the three poison, santu, because they will kill you, understand, spiritually. That's why they are poison. Then Theravada call it evil root, root of all evil. The first one is loba. Loba is greed. But greed alone doesn't translate the meaning of loba. Loba has deep meaning. Loba, the evil roots of greed, include all of your greediness, your selfishness, your lust, your craving, your covetousness, your desire, your deceitfulness, your cunningness, etc. So when you cultivate, when you are mindful of all this mental state, they are the evil roots of greed. That's why you must not have greediness, selfishness, lust, craving, covetousness. Covetousness includes possessiveness, your craving, your desire. So possessiveness is also part of it. So when you see them arising within your mundane mind, thinking mind, then you must root it out. You must abandon it. Then later on develop the wisdom to prevent it from arising. Then cultivate the opposite, wholesome thought, right thought, non-greed, non-hatred, non-anger, and non-delusion. Then dosa is the evil root of hatred, which include all of your anger, your hatred, your aversion, envy, jealousy, dislike, negative emotion, sorrow, lamentation, and grief, etc. Then moha, which is self-delusion or sakayadity, that condition one's egoic mind to arise the three evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, leading to all the egoic personality of selfishness, craving, fear, worry, anxiety, etc. So this is how you understand the three evil roots. They are the roots of all evil. If you have them in your mind or consciousness, then it will condition and cause you to become very evil. You will become a very evil person. So it is very important to develop the training of the mind via meditation to be always heedful, so that you are aware, so that we are aware of our mental intention at all times. And if there is any of these three evil roots, then we should arise the appropriate right effort to either abandon it or prevent it from arising. Otherwise, it will condition us into negativity, leading to all the suffering. As they are also called the three poison, they will kill us spiritually if we allow them to stay in our mind or our heart. This one covers the three evil roots. You got any question or not? This is to teach you how to be mindful of them, so that your understanding of the three evil is very clear. Understand not? Well, I realize Buddhist teaching, they only know how to give answer. No? What is the three evil root? Greed, hatred, delusion. What are they? Don't know. That's why you cannot cultivate like that. He said, when I have selfishness, that is not greed. Because I am not greedy. Oh, selfish is not greedy. Selfish is greedy. So possessiveness is not greedy. Well, people never expand it and allow this understanding. Next one, very interesting. Seeing beyond form and understanding Nibbana. This one is something that you will develop the interest in, because if you want to realize Nibbana, you must at least have the wisdom to see beyond form. Form is the grossest of all the five aggregate asala. Your form is tangible, can be felt, can be perceived clearly via their external form, the four elements. Whereas mind is non-tangible, understand? It's only a mental moment, mental state. So very difficult to perceive, very difficult to catch, very difficult to be mindful of. To develop basic wisdom, one must have the ability to see form as they are, and the unreality of form via its condition arising, its impermanent suffering and non-self or empty nature, leading to our ability to see beyond form. Inability to see form will result in form delusion. And now you understand, huh? Because one will grasp at all the external form via one's own delusion, caused by identification with external form, thinking that they are all real, as form divides. So once we identify via identification with form, let's say with external form, which is the physical body, then one will create the attachment to this body via delusion, hence worrying about it getting old, getting sick, and die. It can also create duality of male and female gender, race identification, young and old, or age identification, etc., leading to all the unnecessary fear, worry, anxiety, possibility of conflict and argument caused by external form identification and division. Unless you have the ability to see beyond form, chances are you are not able to see mind, because mind is much more subtle and intangible than the solid external form. And unless you can see mind, the mundane mind, as it is via the silent mind in sati, true wisdom cannot arise, for Nibbana is cessation of form and mind. And now you understand why thought-based cannot. To learn to see form, the unreality of form, then learn to see beyond form, leading to your ability to see the mundane mind clearly. This can then lead to the realization of impermanence, the an empty nature of the mundane mind or thinking mind, leading to the ability to see beyond the mundane mind via the silent mind, to realize one's true nature, which is beyond thought and beyond mind. At the mundane mind level, one still cling on to one's views and opinion, religious label or belief system, etc. Hence the division again, at mind level, leading to all the conflict and argument caused by one's delusion as before. Note, words divide via form and thought identification due to sakayadity or ignorance. Hence only if one can see things as they are, that is via the direct seeing without word, concept and labeling, etc., only then there is no more form and thought delusion to condition one's grasping and clinging, leading to all the suffering. So this will let you understand. That is, if you cannot see form and the unreality of form, then you will not be able to see beyond form. And everything you come to perceive via your mundane mind, which is consciousness only, will be like so real and so meaningful to you. Hence the delusion of self-delusion, sakayaditi. Also, Dhammapada verse 1 and 2 said, mind is the forerunner of all things, and mind is chief, and everything arises from the mind. So one must be wary of this mind. That's why you must have mindfulness to see clearly how it creates, how mind state are just condition arising, illusionary. So do not be deluded by it. It's just an image up here. How real can it be? Externally already condition arising, not so real. Then why do you grasp? Why do you cling? Well, it's just an image through perception. Even more unreal. So all this understanding will sink in. Okay, part 2, Heart Sutta, lesson 2. Definition. Thus I heard, implying suchness or thusness of thing or tathagata. The Buddha is also called the Tathagata, meaning he is the Tathagata who is an expert in tathagata or suchness. The Buddha understands truth as it is because truth is the isness of thing or suchness. We are accepting what is. So this is to further your understanding. These are the words that people use in the sutta. The next one is very good. We leave it to the next session. Do you have any question? The important quote from 6B Tria Huineng Platform. This one I want to leave it to another session. This one is very good. This one will bring about a lot of wisdom. So, you got any question? Yeah. Very good. Better keep the mic there. Yeah.
Brother, I from direct seeing, right, and then now in 1.10 again seeing. Yeah. So I don't know if there's a better word to replace seeing or see. And what is really seeing?
Okay. You talk about 1.0 is which page? Huh? Page 7. Oh, seeing beyond form. You see, seeing got many levels. Okay, now I explain to you. Maybe I use the whiteboard. Yesterday, what I explained to you, you can remember or not? I see. I see, okay? Who is this fellow? Huh? No. This one is a delusion. So, self-delusion, sakkadidi. Because when you say the I see, you're wrong. Understand? Dead man with the eye open cannot see. Then you say, if I cannot see, I must have mind to see. Then I say, my eye see is the mind. The mind see. You ask a blind man, the eye open. He got mind. The eye open, blind, cannot see. So I alone, E-Y-E, cannot see. Mind alone also cannot see. Then when a person is asleep, he got mind, he got eye, there is no mind to make contact, also cannot see. Understand? So what is seeing? Seeing is condition arising when the three conditions are there. When there is contact, when there is consciousness, and when there is an organ that is functioning. Understand? Then see. So seeing is not a person. That's why the Buddha say in the seeing is only the seeing consciousness. It's just the consciousness that arises. Like this light bulb light up. Can follow? Huh? We have to go stage by stage. Yeah? When this one light up, what is happening to your mind? How do you see? Let's say the table or the Buddha image better. Yeah. Because you are so conditioned by your thought, isn't it? You cannot see things as they are. You cannot have the direct see. You will straight away perceive the thing you see. True or not? True or not? Actually, initially, it's just the seeing consciousness. No one to see. But the moment you input your aggregate of mind, perception, pop, then the memory tell you, Buddha image, come out already. This is wrong seeing. This is mundane seeing. That's why the Mahayana teaching, you familiar with the three types of seeing or not? Three levels of seeing. Kan, san, si, san. Kan san, bu si san. You heard before that. Then kan san, yu si san. How does the three level of seeing come in? First is mundane seeing. You see with mundane concept. We are mundane people, mountain is mountain, correct or not? You cannot argue, understand? No? Because that is the concept that everybody learn. Kan san, si san. But the one that is enlightened, he has the direct see. The moment he see, that mountain is a word, is a concept. Kan san, pu si san. You say, where got mountain? You create through your perception. That is not the direct see. The direct seeing is, I see things as they are before the labeling, before my conditioning, before my views and opinion, before I react to what I see. That's why there is no description. There is a second level of seeing. Kan san, pu si san. Because there is no word, understand not? No concept of what that thing is. It's the pure seeing. Means the pure consciousness. The egoic mind doesn't enter, understand? The aggregate of mind doesn't enter. The sati is before the knowing, before the aggregate of mind arises. Can follow that? Then after he has the direct seeing, he awakened already, he understand already, then he realized he still live in the world, understand? When the wisdom stabilized. Then he realized if he continue to live like that way, he will still have suffering. He will still want to argue, understand? Yeah, he will still say, no, 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 you are wrong. Kan san, pu si san. So, the third level of seeing, when there is wisdom, you can accord and flow. Kan san, pu si san. Ah, pu si san. The enlightened one say, not mountain. Yeah, not mountain. The unenlightened one count, kan san, si san. Yeah, san. Means, you accord and flow. You are at peace. Understand? Not? Because you have the wisdom. You are not confused by what you see. That's why with memory, with all the conditioning, and yet you can liberate from it. Means you know them for what they are. They are aggregate of mind, impermanent, leading to suffering when you deludedly grasp and cling. Understand not? But when you have the understanding and the wisdom connected to this form of mind is not deluded. That's why it cannot suffer. It cannot hold, cannot grasp, no need to let go. Understand not? And then it can live beautifully. And that is the three level of seeing. Direct seeing is the second level. The third level is when you stabilize everything, understand everything, you accord and flow. Everything is just dependent, originating, condition arising. That's why in the Diamond Sutta, you must cultivate until no mark of a self, no mark of a living being, no mark of any Dhamma, like the Heart Sutta say. That is the ultimate wisdom. That is the final understanding of the true nature, born of wisdom. So, okay, yeah? Sadhu, I rejoice. That's why don't be confused by the word see. Yeah? I see liao. I know see, oh, abui see.
Teacher, can I ask one more question?
Can, no problem. Yeah.
I think in the seven factors on enlightenment, right? Yes. There was a mention of a collected mind.
Samadhi.
What is a collected mind and a concentrated mind?
Collected and unwavering. Collected means it come together, understand? Collected. Then unwavering means at the moment of sense experience, when you live life, when you see something, hear something, even somebody shout at you, even the lightning strike, the mind doesn't move. Because it's collected and unwavering. Understand? But it's not in samadhi, you know. It's not in the apana samadhi, concentration. Understand? It's not in jhana. It's not in the stillness state. It is a free mind. But in continuous awareness. Means upacara samadhi. Upacara samadhi means excess concentration before he go into apana. Before he go into absorption or one-pointedness. Well, when you go into that, the mind become a conditioned state, energy field. Then all the hindrances are suppressed. But when you are in the daily life, in upacara samadhi, this is a free mind. The five mental hindrances and three evil roots are not suppressed. They can arise. That's why I can learn. I can understand. When people speak harshly, I hear. If the evil roots are still there, it will stir. It will arise. This is what I want. So that I understand that the evil roots are there, not rooted out yet. You remember the analogy of the Buddha? A glass of water? If you don't stir it, what happened? All the sediment will settle. Then the water like clear. That is what samadhi, apana samadhi is all about. When you are in concentration, you suppress it. It cannot float up. It cannot stir. Even lightning strike, pour hot water on you. Well, I went through that 30 years ago. 30 whole years ago. You are like enlightened, full of loving kindness and metta. But that is still a conditioned state. I was trapped not in one-pointedness. I was trapped in continuous mindfulness. And because of that, I understand what this thing is. So when you have this understanding, the collected or unwavering mind, which is the real samadhi, is born of the paucity, tranquility of mind, still. When it becomes very stable, when you meditate until your object of meditation, whatever you use, whether rising, falling, or your breathing, it becomes so subtle, so quiet. After that, what do they teach you? Like, you, no more breathing, no more rising, falling. Everything becomes so subtle. What do they teach you? The Tamasi way, they say, go and feel, sitting, touching. Correct or not? That is not the understanding that I have. What I have is very simple. When all this become very subtle, means you already in sati, means the mind is in sati. Means this mind has become so still, just aware, no movement. That's why it's so subtle. And this one, when it stabilized, it becomes paucity. That's why paucity is tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind. That is the true mind, free mind, direct seeing. That one becomes samadhi. That's why the enlightenment factor from piti, it will arise paucity. You will bypass sukha. Sukha is bliss. That is attachment, non-enlightenment factor. But when you relax into it and silent and allow it to pass through, then it becomes quiet, still, on its own, without concentration. That is the free mind in paucity. When you, in the formal meditation, have this mind, then you are very near to enlightenment. Then this paucity, together with the sati, will arise, the direct seeing, it will awaken. Then the wisdom will arise. Then when the wisdom arises, what happens? That upeka, the last factor of enlightenment, born of wisdom, that is the real enlightenment factor. The upeka born of the fourth jhana is not the real upeka. Understand? Characterized by upeka because the mind is in the form of equanimity, not disturbed by anything. We are in fourth jhana. No light, no dislike, everything is like very still. But there is a conditioned state. That type of upeka is not the enlightenment factor. The enlightenment factor is the upeka born of wisdom. That's why with sati and samadhi, from paucity is stabilized and becomes samadhi, then you can see things as they are and the mind awaken. Then with the wisdom, only upeka arise, the last factor of enlightenment. Then you can be free in the midst of life. You don't need samatha, apana, samadhi to make your mind peaceful. You can live life and be peaceful in the midst of life, anywhere, any place, anytime. I think we should end 12:05. We will just pay respect triple jam, then you disperse for lunch. Badang puje me. Damang puje me. Sanghang puje me. Okay.